Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Hi, I'm Dr. David Granite, host of Health Matters, UCSD-TV's flagship health series. What you may not know is that I'm also director of pediatric ophthalmology and adult realignment services here at UC San Diego's Ratner and Shiley Eye Centers. I'm proud of our university, and it's an honor to be your host for the second edition of our year-long series celebrating UC San Diego's 50th anniversary. Welcome to UCSD at 50. Did you know that the campus of UC San Diego is considered one of the best collections of modern architecture in the country? How did a university of all places achieve this distinction? It started with visionary urban planning that continues to this day.
As someone who's spent a lifetime in colleges and universities, I've been particularly interested in college and university architecture. When my office got the word that the 50th anniversary was coming up and that each division was going to be asked to sponsor a particular event, we realized that the history of architecture here at UCSD, the built environment, and the relationship between that environment and the natural topography of the Mesa, these were all things that made the campus distinctive. And we thought that they would be a good subject for public events, historical activity, scholarly work, and a general celebration about what made UCSD distinctive for its 50th anniversary. If anyone has spent time on an American college or university, you'll get the sense that there really are two models for university architecture. One of them is the church, the idea that buildings are supposed to look like sacred spaces. The other great model is the library, in which people enter and, in effect, worship at the shrine of the book. When I got to UCSD, I realized that UCSD architecturally was very unusual because there's really nothing here that looks like a church, and there's nothing that looks like a traditional library. When we enter a building, we're entering a very special kind of space that, in a sense, conditions what we're going to do in the space. How do we learn? How do we teach? How do we read? My excitement about UCSD is that each building uniquely recalibrates those relationships.
The master plan at UCSD, I think, is unique in one particular feature. It utilizes philosophical principles rather than what I would call prescriptive principles that would guide the development for the campus. We have five guiding principles to the master plan. One would be connections. Connections would be the roads, the pathways, the pedestrian walks, those kinds of things, about how we circulate around the campus. Another is academic corridors. Academic corridors is an important planning principle in the master plan. The idea is so that buildings that have similar academic endeavors can be placed adjacent to one another to enhance the collaboration that would take place. The neighborhoods are an opportunity to break down the campus into smaller, understandable physical elements. And they may be defined by areas where the landscaping is more similar in nature, or it might be in terms of building colors. There really is no social atmosphere like another university would have with a city or town nearby, and UCSD is in the process of building that university center and trying to create a hub of activity so that there is something that's happening on the campus after 5 and well into the evenings and on the weekends.
I'm interested in the campus as a laboratory for urban planning and design. I think it's a fascinating kind of endeavor that's going on. The part that interests me most is probably the core center, because it is more urban. And it's just now beginning to get formed. And so my dream project is to make more contributions to the kind of placemaking that happens there.
The master plan focuses very much on the eucalyptus trees as being an organizing element for the campus. And indeed, when you look at a physical plan, an actual graphic of the master plan, you'll see that green swath slicing through the campus from north to south, if you will. The buildings inhabit our landscape, and the landscape is the context and the glue and the fabric that holds the campus together.
One of the centerpieces of UCSD by Design is a series of five lectures that we're hosting in concert with the Museum of Contemporary Art in La Jolla. And each of these lectures will feature a distinguished art historian, architectural historian, or architect.
And the center that's in the picture before you is actually a remarkable high point, I would say, in this development, in that it reaches a possibly singular degree of density, and yet...
Each lecture, whether or not it specifically addresses the built environment on the UCSD campus, will speak most broadly to the interests of a community here in Southern California. So the goal of these lectures is not just to serve the university, but to serve the community, to bring people from outside the campus into a shared intellectual and cultural experience, and then, ideally, get them to visit and see the campus.
The campus guide, to me, places an exclamation point on the university's 50th birthday.
What we wanted to do was give people an overview of the campus, the importance of 50 years of planning and architecture here, and some of the forces that shaped the campus. And the way we decided to lay out the book was in a group of neighborhood tours, 110 buildings organized by colleges with maps, and they're in the form of a neighborhood walking tour. One of the things that quickly became apparent is that the spaces between the buildings and the pedestrian spaces and the landscaping and the Stewart Collection of Public Art, those are the things that really make the campus experience as much as the buildings. I'm very proud of the campus. I'm proud to work here, and I'm very pleased that I was able to have the chance to write a book about the campus.
The kind of unique qualities that make Southern California different from other places, sometimes buildings are in sync with that kind of quality, and that's when they really belong here. And as you tour through the campus, you can really see the difference. You'll see some buildings that look like they were dropped out of the sky from some other climate, some other place, even though they're very good buildings. And you'll see others that are just somehow hypersensitive to the conditions and to the lifestyle that's here. My hope is that we'll see more of that kind of architecture on campus. And some of the recent buildings, I think, have been those kinds of buildings.
We understand that UCSD is still a work in progress. Not simply in the fact that we're building new buildings all the time, but the fact that as a young campus and as a growing campus, we always have to be conscious of the fact that once a building is up, doesn't mean that it's the end. That's actually the beginning. Unlike many of the great American campuses that look so obviously like a college campus, UCSD always looks like the future.
My name is Darren McKay. I work at the Engelkirk Structural Engineering Research Center at UCSD, which is part of the Structural Engineering Department. Here at the Engelkirk Center, we simulate earthquakes on the world's largest outdoor shake table. I'm a junior development engineer, and I assist in table operation and data acquisition and sensor deployment for specimens on the shake table and in the blast simulator. We're able to take known seismic records and then plug them into our system and actually run those records. We can recreate the Loma Prieta earthquake or an Anchorage earthquake or an El Centro earthquake or a Northridge earthquake. Here, we've had a wind turbine, seven-story buildings, parking structures. There's no limit to what we can build. One of the jaw-drop thrills that I still get from this job is when I'm sitting in my control chair and I turn to my supervisor and he gives me the thumbs up, we're ready to go, everyone's in place, and then I turn on the microphone and I start the countdown.
Imperial Valley, 200% in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, running.
And then I go over all my instruments on the screen and then I push the button. And that's the most exhilarating thing, because it's really important, and you're holding a lot of money in specimen and research and data acquisition, and people have put a lot of time and energy into this thing. It all has to be right, and that kind of, you know, that gets to you a little bit in the stomach. It makes it a fun job, though.
Oh, here she goes.
At UC San Diego Skaggs School of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences, we are engaged in pioneering work in drug discovery and collaborate with faculty in the School of Medicine and several campus departments on projects such as combating infections with new antimicrobials directed to drug-resistant bacteria. The collaborative efforts involving students and faculty with Dr. Nassé's laboratory are a perfect example of the interplay and synergism we hope to achieve.
Morphology. Victor Nizé labors in the lab on behalf of patients hit with a superbug that's outsmarted modern medicine. One of his collaborators, George Sakoulis, sees patients on the front lines.
Are you aware of what they're going to do today? Okay, they're going to take you to the cath lab.
What started as a simple infection turned life-threatening for John O'Connor. A virulent bacteria spread through O'Connor's bloodstream to his heart. The Palm Springs man was rushed to Sharp Memorial for specialized care from Dr. Sakoulis. The bacteria turned out to be methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA, a bug that no longer responds to the most potent antibiotics. So Sakoulis has to use less powerful combinations, hoping the pathogen won't adapt and become resistant to them too.
He was on the quote-unquote appropriate antibiotics. They didn't work. They tried other antibiotics. They didn't work. Came here to get, different kinds of antibiotics and the procedures that he would need to clear his infection.
Antibiotics weren't enough. O'Connor needed open-heart surgery to replace a valve being destroyed by MRSA. In an era of superbugs, Sakoulis says many patients need longer hospital stays and more surgeries to remove damaged tissue. When he's not seeing patients, the UCSD School of Medicine professor also researches antibiotic-resistant bacteria in the renowned Nizé lab.
And we have all four strains being tested, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that should be helpful.
A medical doctor himself, Victor Nizé saw too many patients losing the battle to crafty pathogens that can withstand frontline antibiotics, largely because the drugs have been overused in human medicine and livestock. MRSA, or MRSA, is the number one cause of infectious deaths in the nation. Of the 200,000 staph infections each year in the U.S., half are due to MRSA. That leads to at least 20,000 deaths each year.
Methicillin-resistant staph is responsible for more deaths in our country than HIV/AIDS. So these are huge medical problems.
Nizé was on a team of physicians that helped save the life of a previously healthy 14-month-old Santee boy. In 2005, Bryce Smith baffled doctors when he became severely ill with one of the first MRSA infections to come from the community rather than a hospital. It took 2 months of near-lethal doses of antibiotics to save him.
Well, it's certainly frustrating as a clinician to have an infection in the patient and be treating that patient and not have an optimal or quick response to therapy.
Caring for Bryce Smith and other children inspired Nizé to refocus his lab research on novel approaches to the emerging epidemic. He began working with the UCSD Skaggs School of Pharmacy in 2007 to speed up development of much-needed medicines. instead of altering existing drugs that will eventually be outpaced by bacteria, Nisei is honing in on something called virulence factors. These are molecules produced by bacteria that enable them to evade the human immune system.
So instead of just trying to kill the bacteria, which inevitably leads to antibiotic resistance, and which has the unwanted consequence of treating all the bacteria in your body, even the good citizen bacteria, we feel we can come in with a little bit more targeted therapy, kind of a magic bullet, to knock out the virulence factor.
Nisei's lab had a breakthrough with virulence factors when it essentially cured mice of a drug-resistant infection by rendering the bacteria harmless. Nisei and collaborators found that MRSA molecules protect themselves with a golden shield. The pigment resembles beta-carotene, which makes carrots orange and nutritious. With MRSA, the golden hue safeguards molecules from white blood cells, which would otherwise gobble them up. In subsequent research, Nisei discovered that drugs used to treat high cholesterol can inhibit this golden pigment.
Okay, so here are two bacterial cultures, and you can see that the media has turned from clear to a golden color.
His lab is also showing that certain drug compounds can boost how white blood cells kill bacteria. Nisei says stimulating the body's own immune system along with antibiotics could give patients a 1-2 punch.
Boosting the immune system is a way that is going to be helpful even when you have an antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And it's going to be particularly helpful for patients who have weakened immune system, such as those at the extremes of age.
One day, immune-bolstering drugs could help patients weakened by other health conditions. UCSD graduate student Nina Haste is getting her Doctor of Pharmacy degree along with a PhD in biomedical sciences.
There's so many bacteria that are becoming more and more resistant every day to any new antibiotic, and it's really hard to, you know, stay on top of it. So we don't even know what's to come. And so the more research that we can put into it, the more we can think outside the box, the further along we'll be.
Nisei says students like Haste provide a bridge between the medical school, which studies and treats disease, and pharmaceutical companies that need to bring profit-bearing drugs to market.
The pharmaceutical companies have gone away from antibiotic research over the last, 20 years. And I think that, the pharmacy school and basic research through the pharmacy school could have a major impact in, showing how new therapies can play a role in patient care and how they can really play a role in treating disease in the future.
It's a very exciting time for our campus this year as we're celebrating UC San Diego's 50th anniversary. As part of the celebration, yes indeed, a big party, I'm asking everyone on campus to drop and give me 50. That is 50 hours of community service. That service can start today, right now. In fact, our very first Volunteer 50 group project is about to start right here on Scripps Beach.
On this fall day, dozens of people answered the chancellor's call and donated their time to kick off a year of giving back.
Today we're doing a beach cleanup here. As you can see, we have over 100 volunteers out here on the beach helping do beautification projects, cleaning up the beach, removing the litter.
We went all the way down to the tide pools and cleaned up all the trash. We found a ton of straws and flip-flops and sandals and cans, things that everyone had forgotten about, but obviously the ocean doesn't. So we came to clean it up, get it out of the oceans, and keep things clean. There's also another group that went to the stairs and cleaned off the sand, made it better for safety issues for children, and really just tried to keep our home clean.
The beach cleanup was not just a chance to be of service, but also to come together.
Today I've met all kinds of people volunteering, new transfers, okay, families, children. It's nice seeing the children get involved as well, because then they can start, you know, getting into this culture of giving back to the community.
I've seen faculty members, staff members, alumni, students of all ages. A lot of the freshmen, this is their first opportunity at UCSD to see the community, and they're being taught by the sophomores, juniors, and seniors all about what it's like here.
I volunteer because I feel that being part of a community is really meaningful to me, and I feel like I can really connect with people when I do volunteer, connect with those that have similar values, and also it provides me a lot of time to reflect on what's important in my society, and I want to make sure that I'm doing what I think is important for myself and for others.
Toting trash bags and shoveling sand, the volunteers carried not only the refuse they recovered, but a sense of responsibility.
At UCSD, I learned that you should give back to your community and be a big part of it, so that's why I'm here today.
Working at UC San Diego has given me so much, and so I want to give back to that community that we're a part of here in La Jolla, but more importantly, here in San Diego. And we have a lot of students, staff, faculty, and alumni that already do great things, and we just want to encourage them to keep that up. And for those that are looking for projects, they can go to the Volunteer 50 website and really match up with a project that's meaningful to you.
UC San Diego alumnus Dilip Rao, now a successful Hollywood actor, joined UCSD's top leadership in the 2010 convocation, welcoming some 5,000 new students to campus and inspiring them to pursue their dreams, as he recounted his story.
I began my journey at this very school, wondering at the tender and fierce age of 18, what would happen to me? How would I please my parents? What would I study? Amongst you here, there are many who are hell-bent for med school. I was one of you.
Yeah, that's very true. I came here to be a surgeon, yeah. That's not what happened.
When I said to my parents in a full-throated declaration, whose volume and conviction could only be born of naivete, "Dad, I'm not going to be a doctor. I'm going to be an actor." My father fell silent. 30 seconds. Maybe 8, really, but it sounded like about 13 minutes. And he said, "You do this for what? For claps?"
The claps were few and far between during his first years in show business, but Dilip did have some luck in 2002 as a contestant on Jeopardy.
All three players looking very, very good in that double Jeopardy round. Now we come to Final Jeopardy, in which the category is actors and role.
I was very, very excited, but I also was trying to be calm because there's a million things about the category I might not know.
In a 2001 film, John Voight played this man. In a 2002 TV movie, so did John Turturro.
And I figured in this category, if I don't get it, I deserve to win, so I bet the whole thing almost. Like, it was 17,000 and 17,400, and, you know, when the question came up, it was like Eureka, you know?
As we go to Dilip. Dilip is looking at me and wondering, what on earth is Trebek doing with all this weird voice? Did you get Howard Cosell? Yes, you did. Did you wager a bundle? Yes, you did. Congratulations, young man.
The prize money allowed him to keep his acting dream alive.
What an actor, an artist, you do is make a private personal bet on your own talent. It's as if you're sitting at home betting on black 11 on a roulette table you built yourself out of the stuff you were supposed to take to med school. And every day you're playing on this absurd table without ever knowing if anyone is taking the other side of that bet. And you keep going deeper and deeper into that madness of self-faith, penny-wise, pound-foolishness, good money after bad, utter and complete obsessive insanity. And then one very weird day, the door opens, and as that bet has ballooned from a small pittance you started with to a mountain, in walks James Cameron, and he pays you.
Dilip Rao got the break of a lifetime, playing Dr. Max Patel alongside Sigourney Weaver in Avatar, the biggest box office movie in history.
I was actually at this really little audition for Nip Tuck, this show about plastic surgery, for a guest star, and I was there with this guy who was in sort of my category. He was like either South Asian or Arab, or, you know, that look. And he's like, "Did you go in for Avatar?" And I'm like, "What is Avatar?" He's like, "James Cameron's movie." I'm like, "James Cameron's making a new movie?" He's like, yeah. I was like, I haven't heard anything about this. So then I call my agents. They're like, oh, yeah, okay, we'll submit you. And I got submitted, and I went in, and I did this audition. Came back on a Monday. I was sitting in a coffee shop, and I got a call from my agent and said, you're going to be in this movie.
I speak to this little story of mine not as a moment of great glory, though I'll tell you, when I got that job or Avatar, I screamed and cried. You believe it. I tell it to you so you know this. Self-belief and passion are the only fuel that matters.
That and a good education.
You can't contribute much to the world if you don't know what's come before you. And a rigorous undergraduate education, regardless of field, even if you pick history and you become a general, okay? Especially if you pick history and you become a general, you learn a lot about one specific thing and hopefully maybe many things. Then it teaches you how to learn what you'll have to learn to do your job. And if you are an ignoramus and if you are a person who's overconfident of their sort of limited knowledge, you end up in scenarios, I think, where you make gross mistakes because your analysis is weak and your mind is weak.
As you sit here safe in the innocence and safety of college from the fantastic unknown that looms beyond, let me tell you something really, truly special. You are all creators of something totally, truly unique and the greatest work of your lives, yourselves. You are the author, the sculptor, the engineer of yourself. It's kind of scary, and it's a weird thing to say, and what in God's name does it mean? Let me try to say what I mean by that. It means that as you grow, what your mind and being dwell on will become who you are. It means that as you learn, where you expend your thoughts and efforts will shape the person you will be. I know this sounds fantastic, but your body of work here, in college, right here, will define you more than just your accomplishments and the tests you take. It will become who you are. I thank you for your time. I welcome you to your studies here, and I wish you the very best, and I expect nothing less from each of you than to change the world in some small or large way. Thank you.
Dilip did not become a doctor like I did, but UC San Diego helped make both of our dreams come true. UC San Diego is a resource for all of us. It's your university. Stop by and enjoy it. From all of us here at UC San Diego, thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. David Granite, and we look forward to seeing you again next time on UCSD at 50.
If I were to imagine this campus 50 years from now, I would imagine it not as a museum to the past, but as a laboratory of the future. At UCSD, we don't follow traditions, we make them.
Take advantage of the tremendous resources that we have on the La Jolla Mesa. This includes a science-intense general campus with strong chemistry, physics, biology, and engineering. All of this contributes to a scientific environment that is world-class and unparalleled.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.